You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your co-host, Dr. Melody Fox, and my other co-host, Alan Cardoza, my co-host, unfortunately, is not with us today. He is out on a case and working that really hard, and I'm sure he's looking forward to being here next week. As each week, we will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. We will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and many great ways to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually healthy. With each of us having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, we have both been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and some truly entertaining and innovative authors who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. We will continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring to you Answers for the Family. Now, today's topic is about today's adolescents, our teens, and how they act out. And they act, why they act the way they do, and what parents can and cannot do about it. And we'll describe specific suggestions on how parents of today's teenagers can have an easier time in dealing with their teenage children day to day. Now, our guest today is Dr. Anthony Wolfe. He is a practicing child and adolescent psychologist and the author of a number of parenting books, including one of my favorites, Get Out of My Life, But First, Could You Drive Me and Cheryl to the Mall? He also just published the book we're going to be talking about today, I'd Listen to My Parents If They Just Shut Up. And what parent hasn't heard that? He also writes a biweekly column for Toronto Globe and Mail. And Dr. Wolfe, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Well, it's nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm just thrilled to have you. I have to say, I loved your first book. Of course, the title, you know, just Get Out of My Life, But First Could You Drive Me to the Mall, or me and Cheryl to the mall. When I first saw that, I was at a conference for teenagers and adolescents, and I'm going, oh, I have to get that book, because what child doesn't come in here and complain and tell their parents, just take me there, but get out of my face, kind of?
Absolutely. And it's real frustrating, because one minute they're nice, and then the next minute they're not. And you try to explain to them, how can you be that way after all I've done for you just 10 minutes ago? And they totally don't get it.
Oh, they don't get it. And they think that we're kind of like that Peanuts cartoon where the adult's just going, wah, 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 wah. It's like they don't hear a word you're saying. And that's what I love about your next book. I'd Listen to My Parents If They Just Shut Up, What to Say and Not to Say When Parenting Teens. Now, how did you come up with that title?
Well, actually, I came up with the title because I've written a number of parenting books. And the first one, which was a cartoon book, which I think sold 3 copies to immediate family members, was called I'll Be Home Before Midnight and I Won't Get Pregnant.
Yeah.
And after that, I sort of got a reputation for having cute titles. So the answer to how do they come up with that title? Well, with a lot of work to try to, I mean, I think seriously to... when you're talking about teenagers or you're talking about kids, that you really are dealing at the same time with 2 things that are exactly the opposite, which is your loving, nice kid who you really love and who loves you and you have this real nice relationship with and this deep bond with. And then there's this day-to-day stuff that doesn't look like that at all. And it's really hard to reconcile my lovey pumpkins who I love so much and I'll continue to love so much to this creature that I seem to be living with as well who doesn't seem to have any feelings or consideration of me at all. And how do you reconcile the two? And the answer is that's not so easy.
No, it's not. I mean, I know you've written in your book about this, but I think it's really important for parents to remember not to take it personally. It's not about them.
Absolutely, and that such phrases as "I hate you," and maybe this is even worth talking about. That what do you do when your kid says "I hate you," and here you love them, you've sacrificed for them, you've done all of these things, really just because you care about them and you want to do well by them, and here's this child who you love deeply. Looking right at you and saying with a lot of deep feeling and maybe venom, "I hate you." What do you do with that? And I actually have an answer, and the answer is you don't take it personally, because it's not. When they say "I hate you," and you know, is this 99% of the time? It's probably more close to 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. What really is going on is that you've said something they don't like, for example, no, you can't go to the co-ed sleepover at the 25-year-old kid's house who you don't quite know what his name is, or you've asked them to take their stuff out of the TV room that's been sitting on the floor for the last week, and somehow or another, that's when you get the "I hate yous."
Right, and most of the time it's they can't really verbalize. They don't have the words, and they aren't stopping to think about what they're saying or really feeling to express to the parents and to communicate. You know, "I'm really upset when you tell me I can't go see my friends."
Yeah, I think that's true. I also think that at the time, and I guess I'm a believer in this, that kids today feel safe. With their parents, at least, saying how they're feeling at the moment. And if they're saying to me, "I hate you," and, you know, what's a good answer to that? "I'm sorry, but no, I know you feel bad about it, but I'm not going to let you go to the co-ed sleepover." Mm-hmm. And they'll say, "But you don't understand. You have to. All the other kids' parents do. This is so unfair. I hate you. I really do. I'm not just saying it." Mm-hmm. But truth is, it's all about that you're not, you want them to change what they're saying about "I hate you." All you have to do is say, "Well, if you really hate it that much, maybe I should change and let you go to the co-ed sleeper. Oh, Mom, you're the best parent in the world. Oh, I love you. I was just saying that I hate you stuff, but I don't really hate you. I love you now because you're letting me do it, and that's so nice, and you're such an understanding parent." That's really what they think.
Yeah, they're very in the moment sometimes.
They're very in the moment, and if you say to yourself, you know, I have to get them to understand how, you know, obnoxious or inconsistent or disrespectful they are, if you really want to try and at that moment get into a deep discussion with them to get them to understand, it's not going to work.
Right.
They'll just go on and on and on and on. And in their head, okay, what they're looking for is to change their mind, for you to change your mind. That's all they're interested in at that moment.
Right. They want what they want when they want it.
Yeah, yeah.
And parents get in their way.
and that's not a bad thing. I mean, it's not a bad thing that one of the things that I really believe that's a unresolvable problem between parent and teenager is that there's a gap that is never going to be bridged, and the gap is that they want to have a good time, and we want them to be safe and be making a nice life for themselves, and they have very different views about that than we do.
Yeah, sometimes they don't match. Sometimes it does, but most of the time it doesn't.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I have a question for you.
Please.
Why do teenagers act the way they do?
And the really big bottom line is that up until the teenage years, they love you, they're dependent on you, they're your huggy pumpkins. That's not a problem being dependent on you, and they want to spend time with you, and when you come and pay attention to them. I mean, think of it, kids before they get to be teenagers want to spend time with you, want your attention, want your, look at this, mommy, look what I did. Oh, mommy, mommy, look what I did. And then this thing happens. And what happens is that they now, and this is part of like normal psychological development, they want to be independent. And they don't want to see themselves as little kids because, I don't know, not too many years they're going to be going out into the world. And if they feel like they're a little kid, that doesn't work out so well. But there's this problem, and the problem is that they still have these strong love, attachment, dependency feelings to you. But now those love, attachment, dependency feelings make them feel like a little kid, and that's no longer acceptable.
So it's a struggle for them trying to figure out how much independence do they really want and need and how much dependence that they still have on the parents.
Yeah, absolutely. But the way it comes out is that if you go into a room, I mean, here's this kid, he's sitting in a room by himself while he's a teenager, he's now 14 or 15, he's having a nice time watching TV, he's not bothering anybody, he's done his homework, and his mom comes into the room, and suddenly, just by her coming into the room, all his love, attachment, feelings come out, but now they're not acceptable. And what happens is that the kid can't wait for his mother to leave. Mm-hmm. And let's say the mother comes over and she wants to have some quality mother and son time, so she sits down on the couch next to him and she puts her arm around him. And when he was 9 or 10, he would have put his head on her shoulder. But at 14 or 15, all he does is squirm and squiggle, and maybe if she stays there, he actually leaves.
Hmm.
And, you know, and the mother feels, what did I do? You know, my kid can't stand being in the same room as me. And the fact is, you know, why do teenagers act as they do? Well, at least at home, the biggest single reason is that part of normal adolescence, healthy, I want to be independent, but I still have attachment to you, reaction, is that they develop this temporary allergy to their parents.
I like that, temporary allergy.
and they really do. They really do. I mean, that just, you know, and here they used to adore you, and they look up to you, and they think you're the greatest thing in the world, and now just if everything about a parent aggravates them, and they just are embarrassed by everything about the parent. You know, dad, you have to breathe that way. And the poor dad who has never been self-conscious about his breathing is for the rest of his life, because just your presence they find to be a humiliation because it reminds them that they're a little kid, and that's no longer okay.
Hmm. Now, along those lines, now do teen boys and teen girls, have you found they express independence to their parents differently, and does it change from parent to parent as opposed to mom or dad?
Overall, there's really, and I think most people who have teenagers will recognize this, that there really is a boy-girl difference, which is that the typical teenage boy turns 14 and goes into his room, closes the door, turns on his computer, gets on his headphones, and comes out for supper and high school graduation. And it really is that way. I mean, even kids who are real chatty and friendly, boys, it can seem like a wall has come down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that they used to come and talk to you and couldn't wait to tell you about their day, and now it's more like, you know, James, how was your day? Fine. And then James goes, I mean, I was like that. I was one of these kids who was a chatty, pretty friendly kid, and I had nice parents.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was a teenager, it was sort of standard. There was sort of a standing joke that there was one thing that I said, one word that I said, and that it was fine.
I used to get told, stop saying fine.
Really? Really?
Yeah, because that was my favorite word. I'm fine. Or
yes,
it's okay.
Exactly, which is if you think I'm going to tell you anything about what's going on inside of me, forget it.
Mm-hmm.
And the classic teenage boy, I mean, I think people recognize this, it's pretty universal, is not only do they physically separate themselves from parents, but they have a way of, even when you're with them, of sort of being absent, which is the famous teenage boy way of talking, which is,
the mumbling, where
you know, the parents think, golly, we didn't notice this before, maybe we should consult a speech pathologist. But maybe there's another indicator, which is that the kid happens to be president of the debate team in school, so maybe there's this other more articulate, friendly version that the rest of the world sees. But girls are different,
uh-huh.
And people will say, and it really is true with guys, you worry about what they're doing, but they're not necessarily where you are. With girls, it's sort of the supreme disruption comes, because these are the kids who, up until their teenage years, they're bringing you these real nice I love you mommy notes with hearts and smiley faces, and then this changes, and a lot of girls do the isolating, and that's normal, but the most typical teenage girl way of solving the problem of what do I do about my unacceptable love, attachment, dependency feelings that I still have towards my parents, what they do is they declare their independence moment by moment in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And they really do, and it can be kind of, and they have so much energy that they bring to it. And there's a kind of paradox to it, which is that it works for them because they just spent, you know, I just spent half an hour screaming at my mother, so, you know, I can't be, that must show I'm not real dependent on her. So now I'm feeling a little more independent, so we can be close for a while. And you get these magic moments. Mom, what was it like for you in high school? You know, When did you meet Dad? What was that like?
Mm-hmm.
And the parents thinking, oh, this is so wonderful. I hope it goes on forever. But, of course, it doesn't.
Yeah. And you know, the girls and the mothers, that is where I see the biggest power struggles with teens.
Absolutely. Because I do think that's probably the closest of all the relationships. I think that kids, guys will be closer with their moms as well. People can be, a lot of teens are close with their dads, but it's a different kind of a relationship. And one thing that I think maybe a lot of people realize is that one of the really good things that has changed is that kids have a lot more intimate relationships with their dads than they used to. It used to be the role of the dad was sort of being off somewhere else, not really involved in a lot of the day-to-day parenting. That's still true, but there's a lot more back and forth that goes on. But still, particularly with teenagers, the closest relationships are with the mom. And above all, I would 100% agree with you that the real passion comes because the girls, you know, are screaming at you, and the mother understandably wants her daughter to behave in a particular way, but the daughter absolutely is screaming against it, and there do get to be these power struggles, no question about it.
Now, I was just wondering, why do you say that teens talking back to their parents is not necessarily a bad thing?
Yeah, I actually do think that this is something that a lot of people are not totally in agreement, but I really do feel that the change where kids now talk back more to their parents than they used to, and there's no question that they do, was because of a major an historic change in child raising practice. And the gist of it is that the more harsh forms of punishment, smacks across the face, getting out the switch or the belt, those things which fear, which used to be the number one child control, a lot of what was part of standard parenting practice is now considered child abuse. Mm-hmm. And as a result, kids today, in a way that didn't exist a couple generations ago, aren't afraid of their parents. And people say, I never would have talked to my parents that way. And I've learned to ask people, well, what would have happened if you did? And always the answer was some kind of fear.
Right.
Even people said, my parents never hit me. And I'd say, well, what would have happened if you talked back? Oh, I didn't want to find out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a great thing that we decided that hard smacks on the face or getting out a switch or a belt or that the more harsh forms of punishment aren't part of child-raising practice. And I think that it's a kinder, gentler world because of that. But, what did you think was going to happen when fear was taken out, the biggest part of fear was taken out of child-raising? Well, duh, they talk back more, and mm-hmm. they really do.
So is that where they would maybe be a consequence for talking back at that point
Parents can, if they want, which is to say, if you want and you ground them from their phone or for a night or some kind of I don't think you want to get into huge punishments if that's what you want. But I'm actually a believer, and people feel differently, and if you get back talk, the smartest thing to do with back talk is at the time, at least, not to respond to it. Because mm-hmm. the more you respond to back talk, all it does is feed it. And mm-hmm. parents get into this endless escalating, don't you dare talk to me that way. I will too. Oh, no, you won't. Oh, yes, I will. Oh, no, you won't. And then the parent threatens some kind of punishment, which later on they either do or don't follow through with. But either way, if you truly want, and I really believe this, if you mm-hmm. truly want to eliminate backtalk, you have to go back to the old harsh punishment way. And I think that would be a real disaster mm-hmm. and the world taking a big step backwards if you want to go back to that kind of real fear in child raising, meaning that a certain amount of backtalk, that comes with having a kid in today's world. Mm-hmm. And you want less of it without having to put much effort into it. You can just disengage at the point they start talking back, and they
right.
kind of learn that their backtalk isn't going to get you to change your mind and isn't going to get you into one of these endless escalating back and forth arguments.
Exactly.
And it kind of ends.
And that to me would be a consequence of them talking back to you, is you don't respond.
And I actually believe this totally, which is that if you can get to be pretty good at it, it's a hard skill because sometimes they drive you crazy and you're responding before you even had a chance to do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But that if they learn that when I become sassy, when I talk in my jerky, nasty teenage way, what happens is that my parent just disengages. They kind of learn that that's the main consequence. So if they actually want to talk to you, they're going to have to at least be a little more reasonable and a little more tolerable to be with.
Absolutely. Now, in your book, I mean, we have so many areas to cover and only so much time, so I want to just kind of move ahead a bit. But you talk about the need for trust of an adolescent and maybe it being overrated. Can you explain that?
Absolutely. And that has to do with the fact that I have two children who once upon a time, they're now grown, but once upon a time they were teenagers. And that's where I learned about trusting your teenager, which is that I'm a strong believer that it's great if you can trust your teenager and that's really, really good if you can have a kid who you can trust. But the great majority of teenagers do, at least some of the time, even wonderful, nice, they grow up to be Supreme Court justices and all that kind of stuff, that as they are teenagers, they do sneak and lie, and they do sneak and lie because they'll say to you, well, I've actually told my parents what I do or what I was doing, they're not going to let me. So, you know, what am I supposed to do? And, you know, all right, I'll be honest. I'm going to tell my mom, Mom, you know that party that I'm going to this Saturday night? Well, there is going to be drinking, and I may end up having sex with some kid who I see there, but, and then the parents start screaming. The kid says, no, just kidding. Mm-hmm. Because the truth is, no, of course they're not going to tell you. And yet, and the wise parent learns to some extent what they can trust their kid for and what they can't. But it also means that you have to have a certain amount of doubt, and you have to not always believe everything you hear. And on a serious note, and this is just a fact, which is that from everything I've seen, where they interview parents, they interview kids, this kind of thing, it turns out that in regard to the risk behavior that parents worry about, which is sex, drugs, drinking, mm-hmm. Parents significantly underestimate what their kids are doing, which is to say that as a parent, you have to be aware that there's going to be stuff going on that you absolutely do not want to have happen, mm-hmm. and that your kids may well, if they're doing it, would almost always be doing their best to make sure you don't know about it.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, that trust thing, it reminds me of myself growing up in high school, and I went to one high school, and I had a friend that went to a Christian high school, and the parents trusted all their kids because they were good Christian kids. But I had never been to a party that had more alcohol, more sex going on, and drugs being smoked in the backyard than at the Christian high school parties.
I don't know if it goes with different ethnic and religious groups, but there is no question that it's very rare that you hear of any group of kids mm-hmm. where once they get to the teenage years that there's not a fairly set percentage of kids who are drink, who are into drugs, mm-hmm. who are sexually active. And a parent of a teenager has to assume not that that's what their kid is doing, mm-hmm. not that that's what their kid is doing. And you can know some extent with your own kid, mm-hmm. but that it's certainly possible.
Yeah, and I wasn't trying to point out any particular group. I just thought it was really odd because I was at another high school. But these parents were so trusting of their children, they never even questioned it.
Well, and I'm not sure why you know totally believe what's going on. I guess as I'm saying that, I know the answer. And the answer is that kids, teenagers, universally are really rather good at lying. And the other teenager who I know real well who did that was me. And I wasn't even doing that much naughty stuff. Mm-hmm. But I certainly can remember, and it certainly was true with my own kids, it's sort of humbling, that they could look you right in the eye and say really convincingly, because they get very good at it, something that's a flat-out lie.
Yeah, and I think they're really convincing because the parent wants to believe it.
Yeah, and they say, and they'll say when you catch them in a lie, they'll say, "Oh, I was just doing it to protect you, Mom, because I didn't want to get you upset by what I was doing." So that, you know, and they really can be rather slimy in what they're doing and not feel guilty about it.
Well,
and not feel guilty about it.
And that's part of being a teenager. Now, we're going to have to take a quick break. We are talking to Dr. Anthony Wolf, the author of I Listened to My Parents If They Just Shut Up, What to Say and Not to Say When Parenting Teens. We'll be back to more Answers of the Family in just a moment. Stand by.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back to more Answers to the Family. I'm your co-host, Dr. Melody Fox, and the other co-host, Alan Cardoza, is off on a case today, and he will be joining us again next week. Today, our guest is Dr. Anthony Wolfe. He's written several books on parenting, and the latest one is I'd Listen to My Parents If They Just Shut Up. I just love that title. Dr. Wolfe, welcome back to Answers to the Family. And I really enjoy the conversation we're having, and I want to learn more, but I have a few guest questions for you, if you don't mind.
Please.
Okay. One is, our two teens, 15 and 18, are like aliens that I attribute to so much access to technology. And although they have all of this at their fingertips, their social skills are seriously lacking when it comes to interaction with anyone outside their peer group. My husband and I are very concerned about their entry into adulthood, which is not far off. What are your opinions on this?
I think it's a real tough and complicated question. That said, one of the things that, and obviously is a huge deal with kids, and this really is within the last 5 years, the degree of it, which is the role that different devices, that is to say TV screens or cell phones or iPhones, have in their lives, so that a lot of the interaction that they have is now done electronically. And in fact, the parents are concerned with their kids that they don't really have as much back and forth interaction as people did years ago. And that's true. Mm-hmm. What can parents do about it? Talking about an 18-year-old, I'm not sure how much control you're going to have, but parents have a right to be able to say if they want. There are going to be periods of time where you're going to be electronics free. Mm-hmm. I have a question that I don't have a great answer to, which is, well, if let's say there's an hour, and it's not like homework or anything like that, there's an hour in the evening that the kid isn't going to be hooked up in some way to the electronic world, what are they going to do? And you say, well, if we want them to interact, well, everybody else is going to be hooked up to the, to the internet. The answer would be, well, they can read, they can go outside and do something outside, and that's all fine. Mm-hmm. But it's a challenge that I think people haven't completely found the answer to. If they're not going to be hooked up to all this kind of stuff, what are they going to do? The good news is that this is the world they're going to be part of, and this is not going to change. It's not like it's going to go back in time, and people are going to communicate less over mobile electronic devices. That's just not going to happen. So that is going to be part of their world, and does it change the nature of interaction between kids and other people? Yes, but I'm not sure that that's completely bad. It's just that it's different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was wondering if it was such a bad thing or if it is. I just noticed kids standing next to each other texting each other, and when they could just talk to each other. Does it seem to be safer for them to do that, to share their expressions or to see it written out?
Well, but that's a good point, which is it, and this is something that, as I think you mentioned, I'm a psychologist who has a practice and sees kids and teenagers, and something that I ask for my own information, that I ask of the kids that I see, and it's sort of ongoing, trying to get to understand it, which is, how is talking to somebody different from texting them, as different from even, let's say, talking to them online over Facebook or something like that? Are there different kind of conversations that you have? And the fact is they are different. And I think people are just, people are now only trying to get to understand what kinds of conversations, what kinds of communication do you do texting, what do you do, face-to-face, mm-hmm. how, one of the things I ask, here's a guy and a girl, boyfriend, girlfriend, they text each other, is it possible to have arguments, to have close emotional interaction with people texting back and forth? And apparently it is, and it is something that they do, and it is something that they learn how to do. Are there nuances that are lost that you get face to face? I would think so, but at the same time, they're really, people will have complicated, layered conversations with people where they are texting. So it's not the same as it is as we experience it, because it's not something that we grew up with.
Right, different way of communicating.
It's a different way of communicating, exactly, and it really is. Mm-hmm. Really is. And we can pretend that we really completely understand the difference, or that by texting they're absolutely losing something. Well, they're losing something, but there's something else that's going on that maybe they're getting. Mm-hmm. And again, which everybody knows, they're doing stuff simultaneously. And I'll say to them, can you? And they'll tell me how they're talking to a friend, they're listening to a song, they'll even be watching a TV program, and all these three things are going on simultaneously, and they really are, and they think nothing of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's how they're communicating with each other. What's the secret of good communication from an adult who's not as tech savvy to their teenager?
Well, I think the one thing that, you can do it online, or you can talk to them texting, which I think a lot of parents learn to do. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, what you're allowed to do is to be able to sit with your kid and say, this is going to be you and me time. And they say, this is stupid. I hate this. I don't want to do it. Besides, I can't. I hate being with you. But what happens is that there will be times, just by you going through the day with your kid, that they will talk, and you can't plan on them. They come out of nowhere. You're going somewhere with your teenage daughter, and she says, "Mom, the condoms work." And parent says, "What? Why are you asking that? We sort of feel you have to." But the truth is that, and kids will say this all the time, that I don't like talking to my parents. I can't talk to my parents because when I do talk to them, they don't shut up. Mm-hmm. And they always feel that they have to give me advice. And my feeling, and I hear this all of the time from kids, and they'll say, my feeling is that when I talk to them, they're always, giving me advice, or they, everything I say to them gets them upset. That I'm really feel, what's the point of me talking to them? So they don't. Mm-hmm. And if you can restrain yourself when they're actually talking to you, and they're talking to you about stuff that they really care about, or some kid who's teasing them, and you don't come too quickly in with advice or with warnings, but rather just kind of feeding them back what they're saying. Gosh, that sounds like it was upsetting. Gosh. Mm-hmm. That must have you worried. Gosh, that must have been difficult. Sort of nothing comments really are so much better, and kids will then, but only then, respond to it. But it's hard because we feel we have to, come up with a teaching comment, mm-hmm. to everything that they say. But unfortunately, that's a mistake, because the result is that the kids will shut up.
Yeah, and we don't want them to do that.
Want them to do that. We absolutely don't want them. And it's almost like when talking with kids, guys and girls, other than when they're screaming at you, that them talking to you, it's sort of like a treasure, and you want to keep it going, sort of like a little flame that you're trying to fan to keep it alive. And the way you do that is by being interested, but not so much giving warnings and advice.
Right, or being perceived as judgmental on what they're doing or what they're asking, or looking for the underlying reason why they're asking it. They have to feel safe talking to you.
I'm not hearing you now. It's not
connection.
Okay.
Well, can you hear me now? I feel like I'm in one of those commercials. I'm not sure what just happened here, but I don't know if you could still hear me.
The connection isn't working. I'm going to...
Okay. Then maybe we could call you right back. But we are talking to Dr. Anthony Wolf. He's a psychologist, has a clinical practice in Massachusetts.
If you can call me back on my cell phone,
okay,
or I'll try and call you.
Well, let me try this real quick. And we're talking to Dr. Anthony Wolf, and we're having a little bit of, I guess we should say, a little bit of technical difficulties here. So I'm going to try calling him back. In the meantime, we're going to listen to one more commercial. We'll be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back to more Answers for the Family. We've been talking today to Dr. Anthony Wolf, a psychologist, and he has written this wonderful book called I Listen to My Parents If They Just Shut Up. We are currently having a little technical difficulties. Maybe it's stormy between here in Massachusetts where he has his private practice. So I did want to talk a little bit about his book too. And I just want to say that as a psychologist and working with a lot of teens and their parents, this is one of my favorite books in order to refer to. And I have so many people coming back to me and talking about, talking about how wonderful his book is. He really covers all the subjects to parenting. He goes through from getting your teen to do anything, which I'm sure almost any parent would like, communication, building strong relationships, parenting revolution, the importance of saying no, which you were saying earlier. Hi, Dr. Wolf, are you there?
I am.
Okay.
I have no idea what happened.
I don't know either, but you're back now, and I'm just sitting here talking about the accolades of your book and all the different areas that you talk about, like interpreting the most popular teenage phrases and character development and everything else. You really go into details about teens and their dilemmas. And as I said right before you got back on the air with us, that this is my favorite book to refer. And I have so many parents that get back to me and say, it's so easy to read. It's straightforward. Your scenarios that you give are straight out of the mouth of their teens.
Well, I think one of the things that surprised me is that the conversations, or I should say sometimes the arguments that kids and parents have with each other are amazingly the same word for word from home to home.
Yes.
And it's like you feel when you're dealing with your kid that you're doing it all on your own and there's nobody else who's in the same dilemma as you, but it turns out a million other parents are exactly in the same deal.
Well, and I'm sure like you and myself in the office, we have different teens coming in and different parents coming in, all saying basically the same things and complaining about the same things. They might use slightly different words, but it's all basically the same conversations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, the one thing I was going to say, which is I think worth saying, because when, you know, as I'm hearing us talk about teens and their parents, and it sort of sounds like, so what can you do if it's so difficult? But the fact is that parents have way more influence on their teens and what their teens do than they realize.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, and I'll give a specific example. I don't consider myself a expert on drug and alcohol abuse, but obviously a lot of the kids who I see are in different degrees involved with drugs and drinking. And I think that over the years, I've gotten better at talking to kids about drugs and drinking. And the bottom line is that I'm just sort of talking and trying to be as honest as I can. And parents, when they talk to their kids about many of these things, the kids hear. They may sit there rolling their eyes, you know, is this a drug lecture again?
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is that they hear every word, and that anything that you worry about is absolutely worth saying to your kids, and it does absolutely influence them, and your words do go in their head. It's just that often it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah. Now, along those lines, and that's great advice to remind parents that what they say, their kids do hear it, even though they act like they don't, and you plant the seeds there anyway, and it has a chance to germinate. But what is the greatest single secret to parenting a teenager today?
Oh, I think there's no question that the greatest single secret on a day-to-day basis is that when you are going against what they want, that is to say, when you're telling them to do something that they don't feel like doing, or when you're saying no about something that they want, that one of the things that is going to happen is that you are going to get back talk, and they are going to argue and not let go. And the greatest single secret in parenting is that once you have truly made up your mind on an unpopular decision with your teenager, you want to disengage as fast as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Because when teens aren't getting their way, they will go on and on forever. And I do mean forever. So you really, if the anything you say, once you made up your mind on an unpopular decision, anything you say is like pouring fuel on the fire.
Right, exactly. Now, we only have a few more minutes, but I want to get to this. You talk a lot about the baby self in your book. What does that mean?
Yeah, no, that's good, because that was something that I was saying. I hadn't talked about it and definitely wanted to, which is that something that is a reassurance, or hopefully would be a reassurance to parents, is that it is a fact of teenagers, of kids, of us, that we all have like these two different selves, the kind of baby self, what I call the baby self, that comes out at home and with immediate family, and all it wants to do is be fed now and do nothing that it doesn't feel like. It's kind of like the regressed version of ourselves and our kids, and we have it. I mean, we know this. When you come home, you're real different. You have this other version of you that talks way more openly and doesn't seem to have the same kind of patience, especially, that you do out in the world. But then there's this other side, what I talk about is mature self, that goes out into the world, functions at a much more mature level. It's sort of the thing that we take out into our work world, and kids the same way. That you know, you have your kid and they're acting like a jerk with you, but you hear about, oh, you know, what a polite child you have, and you know, what's your secret? And you say, what's your secret? I don't know. Are we talking about the same kid? But the truth is that there really are, way more often than not, there's this baby self version that we get, and there's this other version of a really much more respectful, more mature, I don't know a better word for it, version of our kid. And the thing that's really important to realize is that the side of them, you know, which is the better indicator of who they're going to become, and the answer is the mature self version.
Absolutely.
So a lot of babyish stuff that you get at home doesn't necessarily mean that you're losing the ball game at all.
Exactly. Now, I have a quick comment to make, and then we're going to have to wrap it up. Our time went so fast, and I'm sorry we got disconnected for a few moments in between. But a couple comments that came in was, bought and read your book last week after reading about it on the Answers for the Family website. Great title. Love the book. Another comment, last year a number of my friends in Houston created a community parents group to share their experiences. This collaboration has reportedly had great success in dealing with many of the youth that were considered troubled, and I am suggesting they incorporate books like yours into the formula. Thank you so much for offering such great solutions, because they work. So you have a big fan club out there, Dr. Wolf.
That's great. And, I like hearing that.
And just one more, well, two questions for you. Where can people find your book?
Best way to find it is going to maybe Amazon.com or going to any of the big bookstores, and they will all carry it.
And what the very last question is, what is the best thing about adolescence?
The best thing about adolescence is that it ends. And it can seem like a miracle, and it really does, and they get to be nice to you. They parrot back to you what you'd been saying to them 3 years before, and if anything, the relationships I think that kids, young adults have with their parents, if anything, is better than it used to be if the last generation, and that a lot of the parenting that parents are doing really is good and worthwhile and is producing good kids and young adults.
And you as a parent have produced some wonderful books for all parents that have teenagers, just to help them get through. So thank you so much, Dr. Wolf, for being on our show today, Answers for the Family. I'm looking forward to your next book and the next title you come up with.
Thank you.
And thank you. For everybody else, have a wonderful holiday season, and we'll be back next week.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox, right here on LA Talk Radio.